Welcome to the Strength Connection Podcast, a show to share stories, insights, and experiences from some of the greatest coaches in the world. I'm Michael Kurkowski, so grateful for you joining me today. And if you like this episode, please like, share, and subscribe to support the show. All right, let's dive in. Here we go.
All right, and we are live. Jamie Feiler, what's up? Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh my gosh, Michael, thank you for being available and so quickly as well. Okay. I appreciate you.
No doubt. So I just got to say, your energy is so infectious hearing you speak on. So I'm sure I'm not the first person that has ever said that to you, but I got a chance to connect with you through mutual friend Andrew Coates. Just listen to the podcast you guys did. And I was listening to your episode and I wanted to like run through a wall after just hearing you speak on stuff of every different thing that you were doing. So the energy and the fact that you're so successful in what you do, I'm like, yeah, this girl gets it right here. So again, thank you so much for taking time. I'm just curious to really dive into your journey and everything that you're doing.
Heck yeah. I'm an open book. Nothing is off limits. Your questions are great from previous episodes I've listened to. So I'm here for it.
Beautiful. All right. So I want to let's take it all the way back. So I'd love to hear the origin story of how coaches really get into this world and how it really spoke to them. So what was your introduction into health and fitness and to really wanting to get into like the coaching world that you're doing right now?
So my journey started when I was 11 and I was on my first diet. Now I can't tell you exactly what triggered it. I mean, if you ask my mom or my therapist or like 11-year-old me, everyone's going to have a different answer. But either way, I just started cutting calories and it reached its pinnacle, its apex, its rock bottom when I was 15, and it was full-blown anorexia, hospitalized 3 times. So once as an inpatient for 40 days, once as an outpatient for 2 months, and then once when I was 17 or 18 for kidney dialysis for 72 hours. Why am I telling you all this? Because I was obsessed with fitness. Now, obviously, I had taken it to the extreme. It was in quite an unhealthy manner, but I wasn't one of those individuals who was like running 5 hours a day and 3 hours on the elliptical. I would do like 1 or 2 hours on the elliptical, but I was an apostle of Arnold's Encyclopedia. Mm. And that stupid, insane, twice a day volume, 6 day a week program he had. So I was obsessed with getting stronger and lifting weights, Michael. And as the eating disorder got worse, I actually felt better from a confidence and empowerment standpoint. And again, as I shrunk, but as I grew as a human, I said to myself, I don't understand why all women don't know this secret. I literally feel bulletproof. I feel like I have no vulnerability whatsoever. I'm as confident as I've ever been. Why isn't ever like, why are the women I see on the elliptical not doing weights? Mm. So that's what got me started. I like wanted to preach the gospel of fitness and health, although I was literally the opposite at the time to all of the women I had seen.
Wow. So at 11 years old, that's a crazy time to kind of start dieting and really going so extreme on that. So I'm sure there's more deeper into that story of that work, but it's going so extreme right off the bat. Like, do you go back to that at all? I think like where your mindset was at that time.
I have tried to, and obviously I had therapist and social sure. work. And I'll tell you I did a bodybuilding show in 2021 and I admitted or I registered myself in the Overeaters Anonymous program or Eating Disorder Anonymous. Sometimes they're interchangeable because I was so nervous that I was going to trigger myself because I hadn't really been on a hardcore diet since I recovered. And here I was literally purposely taking myself back to 4, 5, 7% body fat. Mm-hmm. I said, I have no idea what my mind, I think I'm healed, but maybe I'm not. Anyway, 5 weeks in, I attended every Tuesday night, I went to a meeting in Tampa, Florida. And I said, I'm so not there. And I cannot get like, I was not triggered. The stories were heartbreaking and awful. And I said, there is no chance I'm going back there. Mm-hmm. I cannot connect with that mindset anymore.
Yeah. So 11 to 15 was this time when you said like hospitalized 3 times, like all this extreme type work. And then during that time, I just want to clarify this. You found weight training at that time in the middle of that when you were feeling bulletproof, or did this come later?
I found weight training at 15. I lied to the guy at the front desk of the gym. I said I didn't have my ID because you had to be 16 to join the gym. Mm-hmm. But like I had been playing basketball there through high school. It's the Jewish Community Center that was near my high school. Sure. Yeah. So he had just seen me consistently come in to run practices, to, you know, just play pickup or whatever. So finally I said, hey, can I just pay the extra $100 a year and get a gym membership? He said, are you 16? I said, yes. And then he just let me have it. So 15 is when I discovered the weight training. And then hospitalized, went back to it, got worse before I got better. And it took me until I was 21 to finally decide it was time to recover and be healthy.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So you heard it here, guys. So lie about your kids' ages so you can get them into the gym as early as possible. That is the first golden nugget right there.
Also monitor them to make sure they're not doing 3 hours of cardio and running their body into the ground.
No doubt. Yeah. So yeah. That feeling of like feeling bulletproof and that energy, like finding weights, can you explain that a little bit more? Like, what was that feeling behind it? Was it just, as you mentioned, like a confidence in your body? Was it like that walking around confidence, or was it from the physical strength that you were feeling at that time?
Yeah, great question. I would say it was both. It was both strategic and it was psychological. So my body dysmorphia, which is obviously goes hand in hand with a lot of eating disorders, it wasn't, I look like this and I see myself as overweight. It was, I look like this, but because I had almost literally nothing but muscle and sinew, I looked like a tiny bodybuilder. Mm. So instead of being like literally 100 pounds and seeing myself as 200, I was 100 and maybe saw myself as 150 with 5% body fat. And I was like, I look so good.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was walking around with this confidence of like, you know, shoulders, six pack, quads popping out everywhere, tiny little butt. But then also, I was given one of those cards that said, hey, here's a little circuit you have to do. And here's the weights that you write in each time. And just adding 2.5 pounds every other week and adding a couple reps every week. I could see it in front of me that I was getting better. Yeah. And it was like, you know, I'm a Virgo. I'm someone who loves achievement. Mm-hmm. I thrive off people saying good job, nicely done. So seeing that I could give myself that validation, mm-hmm. just on a card, I didn't need it from anyone else. I was like, oh, yeah. So nobody has to tell me how well I'm doing. I can just do it.
It's right there. Yeah. It is such a power of working on the physical aspect of strength that goes downstream into mental strength. You know, this is a conversation I've had recently with quite a few people asking about this, like what comes first, the physical side or the mental side of strength? And it's an interesting debate, but you can't deny that aspect of when you do work on your physical health and you see those changes in your body. Yeah. Like that just naturally starts to build those things of confidence, peace of mind, which are the same. All we want to do with mental strength, we want to build more self-confidence. If you work on the physical side of strength, it's probably going to naturally happen in the mental side as well.
Oh, 100%. So in the inner outer strength system, mm-hmm. we have three different phases. There's a physical shift, the habit shift, and the identity shift. And this is exactly what you're referring to. But for some people, the physical shift might come 10 weeks in once they have an evening routine and they have been drinking a gallon of water per day consistently. So the habit shift comes before the physical shift. Mm-hmm. But so I totally agree with you. It's either physical first, then habit, then identity, or it's habit shift, which leads to the physical. And then the third one is still the identity shift.
I love that. I love that trifecta that you have going on there. I want to dive into that a little bit more. Before that, though, so you got your first certification, I believe, at 18 years old. So you've been doing this for like 16 years or so now. What were those early years of like training? Like, did you start training at 18 or did it take a little bit more afterwards? What were the early stages of coaching like for you? So
the early stages were that I got into online training before it was cool. Back in the day, the bodybuilding.com forums were exceptionally popular. Now, this is when I was 18, 19, 20, 21. And I had worked for bodybuilding.com at the time as well, doing there was no live streaming at the time. We just didn't have the technology for it. So I would sit next to Lane Norton and he would type in what the male bodybuilders looked like at the Arnold and the Olympia and the Europa. And then I would type in what the female bodybuilders, the figure and the fitness girls looked like.
Oh, wow.
So it pretty cool gig, right? Yeah. So I was known, not like a celebrity at all, but I was still known on bodybuilding.com. So eventually I got more popular and more authority in the forums. So people started coming to me for advice. Now, here's the thing, Michael, they had no idea what I looked like because I didn't have to post. There was no Instagram. This is in like 2007. Facebook was just getting started, but like I wouldn't give anyone my Facebook. So I was an online trainer without having to show people that I was really almost literally like the 95-pound weakling. But I was getting my degree in kinesiology. I had all of this experience, a love of service that I needed to share with people. So my early days of coaching, I didn't see anyone in person because they wouldn't have trusted me.
You think so? Yeah.
It's hard to say now, yeah. Right? But like, I mean, how many people come into my system, my ecosystem through Instagram and they hop on a sales call and then, you know, the final question, hey, just curious, like what brought you in at your shoulders? Okay, got right. it. Right? Like I saw your abs and I wanted them, right? Like that wasn't an option back then. So I can't say for sure, right. But I know that the majority of people, especially women, would have seen just how sick I was and would have run.
Gotcha.
The other way.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that must have been such a fun experience of like, you know, I mean, Lane Norton, what a great inspiration of guys. And I remember hearing like those early days of those forums. Like I got into coaching in 2008. So before then was all my time where I was just ingesting shit from all those different forums. And there
Elite
was
FCS, Teenage, bodybuilding.com.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was like the early days. We forget. It's like the internet was still kind of like a new thing. You're like, oh my God, like T-Nation, you're getting all this stuff down. When Dan John started writing for T-Nation and we'd be getting all this new stuff, I'm so sorry to all my early clients on there because it was pretty much like all the new workouts.
Oh my God. Are there, oh my God. What's his name? Charles Poliquin's 21159. Yes. I must have handed that program out to every man, woman, losing weight, gaining muscle. Like, yeah.
Oh yes. My God. Oh God. This is a weird story. I don't know how it came out, but me and my buddy had like a Dan John, like 100 singles of deadlift in one workout that you did. And we're like, yeah, let's do that on a Saturday. Didn't realize like if you do that on the minute, it's an hour and 40 minute workout that you're doing with 75 to 80% of what you're working on. I'm still recovering from that. And that was like 2010. So, but no, still great content, but no, it was those early days that were going, all right. So writing at that time, then when did you start getting into more like more one-on-one coaching and kind of working with people individually?
So I graduated university, I guess around 21, I got my degree in exercise physiology, degree in kinesiology, a diploma in exercise phys, still didn't feel qualified to work hands-on with someone because university is literally 4 years of theory, nothing right. in the gym with a human. So I went to the National Personal Training Institute in Orlando and got 500 hours of class and human time. Mm-hmm. And then I finally felt ready to train. So I was about 21, 22, got a job working at an affluent personal training boutique in Toronto, Canada, where I'm originally from. And that's where I spent like 3 to 4 years just getting my reps with clients in.
Yeah. What was that early time like for you in training? Was it like you knew this is exactly what you wanted to do? Or was it just kind of like a job at that point, kind of figuring shit out?
I have always known that this is what I wanted to do. And I'll tell you the core memory for me. I was 15 and I was sat down by the guy who worked the floor at the Jewish Community Center. His name is Nelson. He was my first mentor ever. And he was going through my goals with me. And at the time they were very much basketball related: power, vertical, explosiveness, speed, whatever. And he just kept saying, what else? Like he'd write down a goal and he'd say, what else? And he'd write down a goal and he'd say, what else? And I was like, I don't have any more goals. And he's like, you got to have more goals. There's more. And he's like, well, maybe a pull-up. And he just made me realize nothing is impossible. Here's this personal trainer who made me think that my life is limitless. And I'm like, I want someone to feel that way. Again, going back to like, man, I'm so strong. I want women to feel that way. The way he made me feel that like, I don't have limits. Mm-hmm. I wanted to give that to someone else. So you combine that feeling that Nelson gave me that is like to this day, forever ingrained in me. Plus when I was about 19, The Biggest Loser had its first season ever. And it was Jillian Michaels and Bob Harper. And say what you want about the program in terms of like weight loss and health and all that, but it was the first show that truly legitimized personal training as a career that was lucrative and incredible, because there are doctor dramas and lawyer dramas and medical dramas and police and firefighting. And now all of a sudden there's a personal trainer, which is like the job you get in between college and your real job. That's legit. And I was like, okay, so I can make people feel like this. I can make money and maybe even one day be on TV. I'm done. I'm like signed, sealed, delivered. This is my calling.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Me and my girlfriend, we've been rewatching some of those old Biggest Loser shows because they're on like Amazon Prime. And I remember it's so easy as a coach with your ego when you get into just, you know, downplay what they're doing. This is not the right way to train and all this stuff. But also realizing like these people are losing still a significant amount of weight. However you say the methods of how they do it, still losing that amount of weight is giving a huge benefit to that person. And as you said, like we can attribute a lot in our industry to them popularizing that. I think Oprah was the other one who like brought her personal trainer on her show when she lost all weight at that time. It's like, you think that this industry has been around forever. No, it's still very new in there. And there's some big milestone spots that have helped put it on the map. So we can build influences and build all this stuff from here. That's really interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's pretty much where it started. That's how I knew it was all I wanted to do.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, the power of just a simple question like that as a coach of just saying, what else? And it's like, you know, I'm fascinated by just the aspect of asking questions, you know, where just keep it open-ended for somebody and forces somebody to just think a little bit deeper underneath the surface, right? Because somebody comes to you and it's like, oh, I want to lose this weight. It's like, yeah, that's probably more of a cause of something deeper in there. Just that, tell me more, just what, I love that. What else? Like where that person just sits back and is like, oh shit, now I'm a little uncomfortable. Like I got to actually go deeper into what I'm really thinking here. That's really powerful.
Yeah. Which also helps build the relationship between coach and client. But it's funny. I literally just got off another podcast with a guy who's been in sales for 30 years. And he and I both call the initial phase of a sales call discovery, right? You're uncovering your they might even be discovering things about themselves that they didn't know, right? So they're going to blurt something out, or you ask a question like, what else do you want? And they're like, I don't know. And you say, well, how's intimacy with your partner? And they're like, oh, it's been awful for 8 years. And I said, yeah. So would that be something you'd want to work towards? Like being totally comfortable naked? Yeah, you're right. I would like to work on that. Didn't realize you could do that. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do it. You're going to do it.
Right.
But again, you're discovering, you're uncovering by just saying what else.
I love that. Love it. So this was a few years now of going into that spot. Then after that, was that when you went out more on your own? Was there a couple different stops between that or? A
couple different stops. So I was, I think I had a roster of maybe 25 clients, or I was doing between 25 and 30 hours a week, not necessarily 25 clients, which was a lot, but it wasn't enough. And I didn't have more hours in the day, but I was approached by Canada's biggest bodybuilding magazine. And they said, hey, we've seen your presence on bodybuilding.com. We're kind of like a startup. How would you feel about doing social media for us on all of the local shows in Toronto, Ontario? And then maybe we'll think about sending you out to Canada, like Canada wide. Oh my God, this is so great. And they had a distribution of 50,000 magazines every other month. So I said to myself, okay, if we're doing the math, I impact 25 hours worth of people per week. They impact 50,000 people a month. I'm going there. So I worked my way up from doing their social media to being the editor of the digital magazine, to being the editor in chief, overseeing both the print and the digital. And I was there for about 2 years, and it was incredible until I started getting interviews with some of the famous coaches you just mentioned, Dana Lynn Bailey, Simeon Panda, other influencers. They would post me. Eventually, the eyeballs on my Instagram exceeded those of Muscle Insider. And I said, wait, now I don't have to use their platform. I have my own. So I think it was the literal turning point was when I had 75,000 followers and Muscle Insider had 55. And I said, now my impact has to go elsewhere.
Yeah. What was that experience like for you when you started to see your influence going up and up? Like I asked Andrew about this, you know, because he's got a very big following that goes on as well. But like that keeping yourself authentic into your message without getting into that, like, oh, now I've got some status. Now my shit don't stink type stuff. Was that ever a challenge at all for you as you saw this building up?
Oh my God. I would love to know Andrew's answer. I'm sure it's very similar to mine because we're both Canadian. It's more humility versus ego, Michael. Like I can only speak for myself. I didn't feel like I deserved to be there.
Yeah.
It was total imposter syndrome. It wasn't like, my shit doesn't stink. It's, oh my God, I shit.
Yeah.
Like this, I don't, what if somebody sees it? I don't want it.
Right.
So then it's, and then it becomes, well, how do I maintain it? These people are watching me. Mm-hmm. So how do I produce content that adds value and is inspirational? It's educational without being boring. It's inspirational, but still authentic. They can see that I have bad days, but they still trust me somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I talked about this with Andrew, and I see this in the work that you do too, is that a lot of people say like social media, it's like this highlight reel of stuff mm-hmm. going on. And it's like, oh, you should share your message. You should be really vulnerable about stuff. And it's like, I think that's really powerful, but the main point still is to deliver high value content and like give the highlights for people and stuff as well. And it's like, I think so many people there's so much demonization about like the social media world, not realizing that there's still such a power behind that as well right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the point is it's a highlight reel,
mm-hmm.
but the responsibility, and maybe this is going to be unpopular opinion or polarizing. It's not my responsibility to show you the behind the scenes. It's your responsibility to know I'm a human being and not take what I post personally. You have to take accountability for how you use social media. Mm-hmm. I'll take accountability for what I post. But I don't have, like, you have to know that I'm married. Right. Everyone knows marriages have ups and downs. Mm-hmm. I've got two dogs and two mortgages. Of course, there's going to be some anxiety there, right? But I don't have to show you. You have to decide what you're going to take from my life.
Yeah, I love that. So with this in training, you talk a lot and you work a lot with the mindset side of as well. And at first, that word still is always weird to me, like mindset, because it's like, it's hard for everybody to like have a definition about what it actually means. Yeah. We know it's super powerful. When did you recognize that mindset was such a powerful piece early on in your training? Or when did you kind of see that, oh, I need to adopt more of this work and kind of dive into this with my clients? You know, when did that kind of come about for you?
So they say necessity is the mother of invention. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2020, 2021. It was during the pandemic, but again, I had already been online for a couple of years at that point. But my clients who at the time we were shifting towards the LGBTQ community, even then, they were just riddled with anxiety. They were riddled with mindset issues, self-sabotage. Oh my gosh, just not believing in themselves. And as a result, they kept leaving my program. Jamie, I've got anxiety. I just don't have the bandwidth to track my macros. Jamie, you know, I had an awful day at work. I don't want to go to the gym. Multiply that excuse to over 12 weeks. They see no results. Of course, they're not going to renew with me.
Right.
So I'm like, oh my God, if I don't handle this mindset thing, there is going to be such a push for me to always try to bring new clients in because everyone is leaving.
Mm.
So Yeah.
What was that shift then for you? You recognize it there, and it's a very easy thing to recognize it. It's a very different thing to now start to implement it and working with. What was that transition? How did you change and evolve your program to start adding that piece in early on?
So this would be where the mindset of meet your clients where they're at, not where you're at, comes into play. And I think that is probably one of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten in a business. If they're not doing anything, you should not be giving them 4 to 5 days a week of training, hitting their macros, water, steps, checking in with you every week using a Google Excel chart or Trainerize. They need water. They need to add vegetables to two meals a day and maybe be aware of what a serving of protein looks like. Mm-hmm. Period, full stop. And then maybe after 2 to 4 weeks, you will have earned the right to give them 5 exercises to do 3 days a week.
Right.
That's it. So when it wasn't dumbing it down. It was starting at ground zero. It was bringing things back to basics so that, again, going back to the mindset piece, right? If you give them 7 things to do as soon as they sign up with you, they might do one, which completely blasts their confidence, which then doesn't make them believe in your program, but more importantly, believe in themselves. But if you say, hey, listen, thanks for joining Filer Fitness. We're so stoked to have you. Just want you hitting a gallon of water this week. And they're like, hey, coach, I did it 6 out of 7 times. Amazing. I want you to now stack getting 10,000 steps, a minimum of 5 days on top of the water. And you're just stacking wins now. You're stacking confidence. They believe in themselves. They've built trust with your program. And then again, maybe after a month, you've earned the right to start programming their workouts.
Yeah. You know, I remember when Joel Cochran came on and we spoke, you know, he put this in such succinct words. He's like, the best thing that a trainer can do is to instill confidence. That's what we're all trying to do. Yeah. And we're talking about this. And I saw it. I did this for many years before. It's like you throw a bunch of stuff at somebody and think, well, even if you do half of it or you get it to, oh, it's still a victory. It's still good. Not realizing that this person might recognize that they failed at 50% of the stuff, not that they succeeded in the other 50. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's it's it. Really, yeah. And so when we said it's like just working that one thing at a time, even though it might be incremental, it might be small, it's just getting into the habit that when the person has a goal, they hit it every time. Yeah. So they start to trust themselves, that they trust that when they say they're going to do something, that they do it. It's a complete different psychological, you know, kind of way of viewing it. From there and not realizing that, yeah, like they know they need to do all this stuff. They know they need to work out. They know they need to sleep better. And they start coming with all this stuff right here and realizing that, yeah, if you start adding like 4 or 5 habits at one time, that's overwhelming for you or me. I've been doing this for decades of stuff. Somebody just getting along in the journey. Yeah. They're going to check out after the first day.
Yeah, that's it. And again, that's where the physical shift, habit shift, identity shift comes in. I had a blatant disregard or just even zero knowledge of the identity shift that needs to take place for lasting change to occur. I need to get them not thinking of, oh my God, I want to take them from, I have to work out 4 days a week to by the end of my program, I am an athlete. Mm-hmm. There are milestones that occur to go from point A to point B.
I'm processing that because that's really powerful. It takes it from something that you do into something that you are.
Yeah, that's right. It becomes your identity, right?
I like that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You know, I talk about this a lot and it's still, I always, you know, go back into it. Like as fitness professional, we're all trying to do our best, but still it's like 5% of people succeed like long-term in their health and fitness goals, even though there's like 750,000 certified personal trainers out there. And I know you work with a lot of coaches as well in, you know, one of the businesses that you do. Where do you see like if there's a specific disconnect from like what a lot of trainers are doing to what we need to be doing more just as an industry in general?
I think a lot of trainers, and again, this could be social media. A lot of trainers are going too broad and not specific enough. And this is both a sales strategy and I guess just in general, in order to help more people, right? Like in my opinion, my cardiologist is just a better doctor than my GP. He's spent more time studying the heart and all things that could go wrong or right with it than the general doctor.
Right.
So trainers need to start niching down, right? Like there are a couple men in our program, but not many. because I don't know for so many reasons. I don't know the first thing about how a guy's mind works,
right?
But I also don't have an interest. I've chosen.
There's not much going on. So
in my head, it's like food and boots.
Sorry, saying that in jest, everybody. I apologize. Go.
Yeah. So I think trainers are missing the mark, honestly, because we're in service, right? Nobody does personal training to make money. And we joke about it all the time, but it's true. We just want to help. We just want to help people get healthy. And in our head, it's men and women who need to lose fat and gain muscle. You are helping no one by helping everyone. Go spend extra years becoming a cardiologist, and put it in quotes, in your field, so you can be really freaking good serving like one silo of people.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those things. I was there myself. You were probably there too. Like, you want to just help everybody when you get in. Yeah.
If you're 25 an hour, 30 an hour, I don't even care. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Whatever. Anybody who wants to throw me some dollars, like, I will figure out how to work with you. I'll work with you. If you're 90, I'll work with you. If you're 6 years old, and you think that that's just how it rolls, not realizing that, no, when you actually do niche yourself down and make yourself a little bit more exclusive, you're also setting up just natural boundaries for yourself. No, I don't work with your people. Then you can maybe refer somebody else. You work with networking on it, but then you actually find that you're actually working with the people that, number one, you want to work with, and two, like, you can really give your best energy to that person, like, and really put all of what you have in there. And I think maybe it comes from a scarcity mindset, where, like, when you get started, like, you just think that there's only a certain amount of people that are ever going to help, when realizing that this is an abundance-based world. Like, you know, the more people that we have that are doing good things, probably the more beneficial it's going to be for you. It's going to be for me, but it's a tough mindset to just gather around. When you've talked with trainers before, is that some of the struggle that they have, like, talking about, like, niching down? Is there, like, an anxiousness at all when you talk with trainers like that?
Right. Because they don't see it as, they see it as me cutting off part of their heads, right? If you're a monster with many heads, I'm telling you, you have to be a monster with just one head. You don't realize that if you weren't trying to feed 10 different heads and you just fed the head of one monster, that monster would grow and grow and grow. Right. Also, if you go a mile wide versus a mile deep, you're still going a mile. There are no lack of people. Again, we're just niching down. So 100% it's an anxiety, and they think that I'm going to ruin their chances of making more money.
Right.
Yeah.
I get it. I'm going back.
Good.
No, I'm saying I'm having flashbacks back from a million different conversations I've had in my head of niching down from there. Cause it's a challenging thing to dive into.
Mm. But I was just going to say, like, my own business is a perfect example of the riches are in the niches, right? Like, we went from everybody to women who wanted to lose fat, to women, the LGBTQ women who wanted to lose fat, to LGBTQ women with anxiety who are unhappy with their body composition.
Beautiful.
Right. And that's it. Yeah. Beautiful stuff. And then again, now I'm at a point in my business where I can coach people on business because of the success I've seen.
Yeah. So with the people that you work with, specifically with women, are there some specific common struggles that you see that they're coming in with, like, that all are kind of, you know, similar common denominators? Is it the anxiousness of not knowing what to do? Is it they've tried a million different things and don't know what the next level is? What are those common conversations that you're having with people nowadays?
It's definitely the overabundance of information. Mm-hmm. You know, often I might be people's first coach, but I'm not their first weight loss effort. So they've been burned before. So there's this fear that, why am I paying so much money just for it not to work again? Mm-hmm. There's also a level of embarrassment, man, if it doesn't succeed again, it's my fault. And nobody wants to point the fingers at themselves. So that's also really hard. So there's shame, guilt, embarrassment, anxiety, also just like generalized anxiety disorder. A lot of the women who come into our system are just overwhelmed by life in general. So they've taken the first step by hopping on a discovery call with me, but that doesn't mean they're ready for macros or workouts yet. So again, we have to be very careful about the language we use on those discovery calls. We have to show them this isn't exercise, it's just movement. This isn't a diet, We're just cleaning up your nutrition.
Yeah, it is. I read this stat that I think the average woman starts a new diet three different times a year who's over the age of 40.
Yeah, I would not be surprised.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
people are already coming in and they're probably already thinking that, like, well, here I go again. Like, this is my start again. So if you go in with the same exact question, same exact thought process, just get after it right away. They've probably already done that numerous times before. How powerful it is just to sit back and just ask that person, as you mentioned it on the Lift Free or Diet Hard podcast, of interaction versus transaction from there. And I love that. And I think anybody who's like in this industry and coaching, like, sit back in that first discovery call, like actually just have just a relaxed conversation for a minute. Everybody's probably anxious already in that first conversation, right? It's like
Yeah.
freak out. They're seeing somebody that's really fit, has good skin, like all of a sudden, like they have all the things that they're probably aspiring to do. That could be a really scary thing for a person coming in right off the bat.
Yeah, 100%. So again, we diffuse and we use a lot. I understand, right? We cock our head for empathy. I get it. I totally understand. Yeah. But also, again, there's social proof, right? Don't worry about the way I look. Look at the way like the five other people from the emails that I've sent you between when you booked the call and now, like, look at the results that we're getting. But you definitely have to go into the call with high intention and low attachment, because very few people who hop on calls are like ready to buy right off the bat.
Yeah. I had that for a bit. Like, I know, like, I was in a place where I was very aggressive on the sales front. It's like, get them in, like, that first call close. And it always felt, it feels just a little icky, even if the person buys right there, because out of just sheer desperation that they want to make a change, of actually setting up right off the bat and being like, hey, there's no pressure right here. Let's just have a conversation. Let's just enjoy. And if people are just having more conversations, it's only going to make things better and better going on. And then you just feel it, everybody just exhales for a minute, just kind of just enjoys the process a lot more. So I want to ask you, Jamie, a little bit more about this trifecta of the physical, the habit, and the identity in there, because I absolutely love that from there. How's this process start? Do you explain that right off the bat with people that are coming in, of like how this process works, or do you do it more like, all right, this is the first step, and keep the other ones in a fog a little bit because you don't want to overwhelm them?
We're definitely keeping the other ones in a fog. I like not to have my sales calls be too long. So depending on where we are in the conversation, I do say in no world is this going to take less than 12 weeks. Sometimes, and then that's where I'll go. Sometimes just the initial phase of the physical change to get you to buy in, to create momentum so that you stick with us, takes 12 weeks. There are other people who get the concept of macros right away. So they see the physical change within the first 4 weeks and they're able to shift to the habit phase already. But I say, a minimum of 4 to 8 weeks for per phase. And that's to let the program do what it needs to do. Because again, the faster it comes off, faster you're going to put it back on again, unless we get to the habit shift and the identity shift. Because people who identify as an athlete, they don't binge on the weekends. They don't drink in excess. They have a morning routine, right? There are just certain things we know athletes do that people who are just on a weight loss journey don't do.
So I want to ask about kind of these transitions from one to the other, as you said, because like going into a habit shift in there, they are building some habits in the physical side of that. How do you kind of differentiate and go into another phase of coaching when you go, all right, now we're going into like the habit shift? How does that process differentiate?
You usually let the client tell you. So for example, I had one woman that said, "Hey, Jamie, she works for Costco. So she is sent to the different warehouse units all over the US. And she's like, "Hey, Jamie, what is your code for Icon Meals? I'm going to Texas next week." That's stuff Katie and I do. That is not something a beginner client does. But she is adopting, she's now at the habit identity shift because an athlete makes sure that they're prepared. An athlete has meals ready for them in the mini fridge and has asked for it to be, installed in the hotel room in advance of them getting there. An athlete doesn't just use the per diem that Costco gives you to buy whatever, right? Or when a client says, "Jamie, I went on vacation and it like I was getting antsy because I couldn't work out. That's an athlete, right? In no world would an athlete not train at all for 7 days. Yeah. So the client will give you into, hey, I've never felt better being on my morning routine. All right, we're good.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
That's interesting because it's, I think as coaches, sometimes we want to take control of the whole situation, not recognizing if anybody's going to make a real like change that's going to sustain for a long time, it's going to be on their terms. Like your brain believes you, it doesn't believe me. Yeah. And that was a shift I saw going into more of the online coaching over the last few years when I built my business, because I was in person for a long time. And then realizing that in person is great, but it can very easily turn into an enabling relationship where somebody's relying on somebody to tell them what to do. All right, we're going to the next stage. We're going to the next phase. And then COVID did this for a lot of people. Like all of a sudden nobody could go and they see their coaches anymore. Now all of a sudden you're on your own. And that was a shift in my head. Cause a lot of conversations I was having with clients was like, well, I don't know. I don't feel like I know what I'm supposed to do if you're not there.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh fuck, like what the hell's going on? Like
it's created dependency.
Yeah. And I think it's as a, you know, and you're trying to help in the best way, but not realizing that by just I'm going to take all this for you. Like I'm going to get this down. Yeah. It feels good in the moment, like you're taking control, but yeah, the client's going to tell you when they're ready to go to the next phase. And that could be a really tough thing as a coach, because you kind of have to step back and be in the passenger seat of the car and let them drive and go over the bumps and go in. And then sometimes you just pull them out. All right, let's turn this way. Let's go here. But it's a hard thing to shift in that time.
Yeah. But I think if you've been in the game long enough, like another great example, you know, I said, either you can start with the physical shift or you can start with the habit shift. You have a client that comes to you who's super anxious, right? But wants to lose weight. Okay. So you essentially can either choose the physical shift route. You can say, all right, here are your new macros. I'm going to put you in a deficit. Or you start with the habit shift. Okay. What is your night? What does your sleep hygiene look like? And again, as a coach, you have to be intuitive to say the last thing this client needs is macros, because it's going to stress them out. I'm going to start with the habit of an evening routine so that they sleep well, so that we can bring cortisol down, GH up, this and that, they're going to be primed for tomorrow. And maybe if they sleep for 14 days, then I can start them on macros.
Love that. And all right, I'm going to shift this a little bit, because I want to ask you about how you, this concept of work-life balance and like balancing everything and stuff is always fascinating to me. Right. And yeah. I mean, you wear a lot of different hats from different businesses that you have, you know, you're also a wife. I mean, all this different stuff of managing things. How do you approach your day of getting everything that you need to done at the best possible way while still maintaining all the other things that you want to do in your life?
Plant medicine.
Let's go to microdosing now. I love it.
Yeah. So that wasn't always the case. I'm a fan of the words integration, work-life integration, because I don't believe if I was to be a great wife, there would be no balance. If I was to be a great entrepreneur, there'd be no balance. But I have found it's not perfect, but I found a great equation only as of January that has helped me integrate both, that allows me to be a fantastic wife and a really solid business owner. My problem was, and I don't remember in which book I read this, but with work-life balance, you think of a bowl of water and one drop of food coloring poisons the water. So if my wife and I are on the couch and I have my laptop out, I have poisoned the water. I'm not spending quality. That's balance though, right? Hey, we're on the couch watching our show, but we're not. I'm programming. Right. So the water of business is poisoned and the water of relationship is poisoned. Mm. So I realized this again, thanks to, it wasn't a microdose. I went on a journey. We megadosed on Friday. We megadosed on Thursday, integrated Friday. We megadosed on Saturday, integrated Sunday. And I realized that what I was doing was so heavily in my business because I wanted to build this perfect life for my family. I wanted the house and I wanted the money and I wanted the stuff and the trips and the vacation, that I had essentially built a castle for my queen that she was in alone. Yeah, that's what I did. I built like a moat and I built the nicest little mansion. that she couldn't enjoy with the person she chose. And it was 4 years of that.
Yeah.
And then finally, come January in this experience, I said, oh my God, you've been alone for 4 years because I thought I was building the business for you. And I was, but you didn't get to enjoy it with me. And totally, I haven't been enjoying it either because it's the reason that I'm not with my queen.
Right.
So again, all of my waters have been poisoned. So now I do not start work before 8. I do not work after. Okay. Usually I cut off at 4 to go to CrossFit. That's also something that's recently been introduced because I cannot use my phone during CrossFit. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know so many trainers, they'll go to the gym and in between sets, DM.
Oh, yeah.
Andrew walking around with a voice book. Right. But again, like Andrew's great at what he does, but he's poisoned his workout, right? We all have, because we're not fully present. But with CrossFit, I'm huffing and puffing through a 19 minute AMRAP. There's no voice note happening. I'm not thinking about a client. So laptop is shut. Sometimes I'll open it for a 6:15 sales call. Sometimes I won't, but either way, like the work is done when the CrossFit starts.
Yeah. That's so powerful. I started doing last year before I went into a workout would say a little mantra. It was kind of just a short prayer, which is like just a 1 minute, 2 minute, just kind of micro transition over to, okay, I'm focusing right now, even for 20 minutes or so, because beforehand, yeah, you're warming up and grab your phone or you just check a quick message or so. It's also, you don't realize, I love that analogy you used of just one drop of food coloring, it poisons the water. It could be a huge bowl.
Yep.
It just needs that one drop. And you can feel that in things that you do. I've had those workouts where, yeah, like, oh shit, I just heard my phone beep. Oh, I got to go get that. Like you're just in the middle of zone. So actually taking that time just to, it's an easy thing to say, but not an easy thing to fully integrate going in. So I love that you said, like, you have your boundaries of your time slots that you work with there. Was that a hard transition for you? Or was it like, no, I need to make a change right away?
No, it's still a hard transition because although I am like, I own a couple businesses, I'm still a coach. So right. I still have that fulfillment mindset. So when I see the notification come in from a client that's like, hey coach, I'm going to be getting my check-in late. Okay, Megan, no problem. Thanks so much for letting me know at 7:30 PM.
Yeah.
No reason for that. No reason, because it's not like I'm going to respond to Megan's check-in. I'm still going to respond tomorrow during my office hours. Mm-hmm. But I don't need to message her. So, and my wife is great about calling me on it, right? We mentioned accountability before. You need those people who are going to hold you accountable in your life and make sure that it's not just about the education. I know what to do, Michael. It's the implementation. Mm-hmm. I need a coach. I need like a mindset mentor. I need a wife to say, hey, you made this promise to me and yourself. You have to keep it.
Yeah. How powerful is it, do you think, to have a supportive spouse, supportive partner, and people around you to get your success? I think there's this message that goes along right now about this like me against the world mentality where I don't need anybody, this like Sigma type spot that it's all on you. And I think as entrepreneurs, that message gets in your head a lot of like, you need to be the one, like you need to be going on. And then it's very easy to think like, I don't need anybody in order to succeed. But you're very open about, you know, your relationship on social media and how supportive you guys are. How big is that for you and all that, the work that you do?
I think it's unparalleled. I don't think anything, I mean, it's more important than like my payment processor for keeping my business alive. I think that's saying it's me against the world and I can do this on my own is saying the equivalent of I'd be able to get like from here to the gym if there were no street signs. How would you ever course correct if you have no idea where you're going? You need the friends that call you on your bullshit, but you also need the friends that tell you when you're doing a good job. You definitely need a partner that's supportive, but also is your voice of reason, because you don't just want a yes man. It's our money. I can't just be spending it on mentors and courses and this and that. She has to rein me in a little bit, right? This is like your season of earning, but then we need a season of learning and then a season of earning and then learning again. So you need feedback or you cannot get anywhere.
Yeah. I love that, because I know in your discovery questionnaire that you do, you ask that question right off. Do you have a supportive partner? And I love that you asked that right away, because I've seen so many people who are going in and thinking they need to do this on their own, or haven't talked about it with their spouse or even like their friends, like, this is what I'm doing, thinking they need to do this on their own. But having that supportive cast around you, not just to give you like a atta girl or an atta boy, but also to call you out like on your time of being like, hey, like you need, like you said you want to do, like you need to reel yourself back in.
100%. And again, like feedback, even on your, like your social media posts, you know, I'll have friends, I'll throw a post out and a friend will write to me, was that you or ChatGPT? And I said, it didn't sound like me, did it? And I said, nope. And I said, okay, if you could tell that, then someone who's been following me for 2 years could tell that. I should probably put it back into my language.
So you got good friends. I love that. So, Jamie Filer, you are fucking awesome. I love your energy. Seriously, I'm so grateful that you came on. I really love the work that you're doing. And just, you have such an authentic spirit about you. And, you know, coaches that are leveling up and just trying to build this business and this industry, you know, to what I know it could be, you're one of those people. So I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. Again, you could have, you could run the gamut of other guests, but you chose me and I appreciate you.
Thank you. If people want to follow more about everything that you do, what's the best place that they can go check you out?
Instagram. I am at JAIM and the number 91, JAIM91. I answer my DMs, not while I'm working out, but you can get in touch with me there.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'd love to have you back if you're open for it. We'll go dive deep into the psychedelics and all that aspect of it, because I got a million questions there. So, all right. Until then, Jamie, thank you so much. Listeners, go follow Jamie. You know what to do. I'll catch you guys on the next one. All right. Peace, guys.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you found some great value here. And if you like this episode, please drop a comment and leave us a 5-star rating and review. It does more to build the show than you could imagine. And do not forget to check out and join the Strength Connection Facebook group. In this group, I share the biggest takeaways and lessons from these amazing conversations, as well as training and strength tips for pursuing mastery and fulfillment in life. This group is filled with individuals looking to take full control over their strength, and it's the perfect space to explore new ideas and to share your journey. You'll also get exclusive access to the Strength Connection Mastery Seminars to deep dive into the physical, mental, and spiritual training that you can begin using immediately. So do not wait. Go now. Seriously, go. All right, much love to you. Thank you so much, and I'll catch you on the next one.